Hollywood is rated LGBT radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
And welcome to this installment of Rated LGBT Radio. Today we have a great show for you. We're actually talking about a great film. It is a documentary. And if you are a regular listener to our podcast, you've heard us talk to quite a few documentary filmmakers and documentary films. All have been great. I mean, I can't think of one that has not been worth your time to go see, all on great subjects. This one is even a cut above that, in my opinion. I am still working to kind of emotionally unpack it for myself and the emotional impact it had on me watching it. The film is called Transition, and there is kind of a symbolic poetry to the name Transition in this case. The film is about a trans man who is embedded with a group of Taliban soldiers in Afghanistan while said trans man, whose name is Jordan, is literally going through transition. And at the same time, the country of Afghanistan is transitioning back to the Taliban. So that is the situation. It sounds like a plot that you might take to a Hollywood studio and say, hey, wouldn't this be a great concept for a big drama film, you know, with full of action and tension and all that? And I'm sure they would buy off on it. But the case of this documentary, it is real life. And there are several themes that go through it that are nuanced and somewhat subtle and somewhat not so subtle, and just has a huge, at least for me, again, and I assume for most people who watch it, emotional impact. Well, today we are fortunate, waiting in the wings is Jordan Byron, who is the star and director of the film Transition, and it is just actually part of Jordan's story. Jordan's story extends far further than that one experience, but it is quite a poignant part of his story. And Monica, why am I having trouble with this? Monica Villamizar, who is the co-director of the film, and just excited to talk to them both about the film, how it came about, and everything else about it. In the meantime, before we bring them on, I do have waiting in the wings also the co-host of the show and the editor-in-chief of the Los Angeles Blade magazine. This is how excited I am to talk to our guest. I can't even get there fast enough. Editor-in-chief of the Los Angeles Blade magazine, which is the magazine you need to read every single day for upstanding quality journalism, winner of the GLAAD Media Award, and unique stories, like I said, every single day. Brody Levesque, and Brody is going to tell us what is going on in our world. Brody, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rob, and greetings to all of our listeners. It's been an interesting 48 hours. I first want to note that we saw passage yesterday of a longtime champion for the queer community, former Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman, passed away at age 82. In a statement released by his family, the senator had died as a result of a fall in his New York home in the Bronx. Lieberman is best known for championing the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal. He was one of the two co-sponsors for the initial legislation. He literally shepherded all the way through. And he was instrumental in getting it passed. He was also a co-sponsor and a signature on the Matthew Shepard, James Byrd Hate Crimes Act, which was passed in 2009 as an amendment actually to another piece of legislation, and then that was signed by President Obama as well. Lieberman had started off his career as a Democrat. He ended it as an independent. He was definitely a force and voice for progressive change in American politics. Joe Lieberman's dead at 82. Yesterday, the Office of the Medical Examiner for the state of Oklahoma in Tulsa released the final autopsy results on the death of the 16-year-old trans teen, Nex Benedict. Nex's death has been, of course, a hot-button topic in ongoing national discourse over transphobic and homophobic bullying in public school settings. Earlier this month, the medical examiner had released page one detailing the fact that it was the opinion of the medical examiner that death was a suicide and it was caused by an overdose of Benadryl and Prozac, a combination of the two drugs taken together, which became lethal. There has been a considerable amount of back and forth on this particular case since it first broke back in February. We have seen a lot of folks taking different positions on it, but the fact still remains. Regardless of the overarching circumstances, this child was bullied, and there is still a high incident of bullying going on in that school district, and for that matter, across the entire state of Oklahoma. Right now, as we are on the air here in Oklahoma, they're just now wrapping up a state board of education meeting. There has been a tremendous amount of pressure to remove Ryan Walters from his position as head of the state superintendent, basically. And the biggest problem has been that he's been so transphobic, so anti-gay, and he's really fostered an environment negatively for the students in the state of Oklahoma. Additionally, he also brought in the social media far-right extremist Chaya Reich, who's better known as the Libs of TikTok. This person is completely anti-queer, and put her on the board of a committee that looks out for library books across the state of Oklahoma, which has also raised eyebrows. So that happened yesterday. We're still kind of keeping up. The story keeps continuing to develop, but it's sad. You know, no matter what we do, and you know, it's just a sad story overall. And so that's just the way it is, you know. Looking at other things as well, we just got a study that was released today that was put out, and this is by the Data Impact Project, that shows that 24% of trans adults now in the United States are not getting access to health care. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that all these laws are being passed. At last count, actually, Rob, I think we're at like 425 anti-trans pieces of legislation right now in all these legislatures. It's just nuts. Yeah, it's completely crazy. So we've got that. And essentially, the only other thing that I want to highlight for our readers is we're starting to move into the political process and the political season. I cannot stress enough the importance of getting engaged, volunteering, getting to know your candidates. You want to back candidates who are obviously allies to our community and strong allies. You want to also back queer candidates because we actually have quite a few of them this year. But this year is going to be critical, and I cannot emphasize enough the absolute necessary need for everybody to get involved and get engaged. So that's just a brief look at what's going on today.
Okay. Well, thank you, Brody. Appreciate that. And yeah, it's like it's astounding where we're at, even in this country. So anyway, enough of that. We're going to move on here. I'm going to bring on our guests today. Again, we are talking about the documentary Transition. In the film, Jordan, who is one of our guests today, gains incredible access to a Taliban unit during the fall of Afghanistan. The country's transition coincides with Jordan's own physical transformation as a trans man. While he and his local videographer, Teddy, embed with the Taliban, Jordan, who is actually from Australia, conceals his physiology and is accepted as a man. If the Taliban were to find out, he and Teddy would likely be in grave danger. And during the film, he struggles with the moral and ethical dilemmas that come with his unique situation. The film follows his journey as he paradoxically gains more freedom as he transitions, while deftly chronicling the increasing oppression of women as the Taliban transition to power. Jordan himself is a recipient of 2 BAFTAs, 2 Emmys, and a Human Rights Press Award. His co-director, Monica, is a Colombian-American director, producer, and on-air reporter. She herself has won 3 Emmys and was nominated for a prestigious One World Media Journalist of the Year 2015 award. So it's my pleasure to welcome this outstanding team to the show. Welcome, Jordan and Monica.
G'day, g'day.
Thank you so much for having us. We are very happy to be here, and hello to all of your audience that is listening live right now.
Thank you. We appreciate you for being here. So I'm going to start out with a very off-the-wall, bizarre question. So during the filming of Transition, Monica, one question I kept having in the back of my head, I don't know why, but was, where were you? Were you behind the camera? Were you from afar? How, I mean,
that's
a woman director,
question. So,
where were you?
Exactly. I was with Jordan and Kiana and Teddy for some part of the filming in Afghanistan, in Kabul, the capital, where I had a little bit of freedom of movement, like other women, restricted nonetheless. But when Jordan had to travel to be with the Taliban unit in a very remote rural location, I traveled with him and the crew up to a certain point. I had to stay in a hotel in a city called Mazar-e-Sharif, and they embarked on a 7-8 hour journey by car across multiple Taliban checkpoints where I could not be seen. I could not be in the car because I am a woman. So I was, you know, pretty much locked up in a hotel communicating with Jordan and the crew via telephone messages.
That was kind of my assumption or my imagination of how it was going for you behind the scenes, which also I'm almost speechless over your film, you guys, honestly, because it has so many themes, incredible themes coming at you at once on so many levels. And there's the cultural theme and the misogynistic theme, and then the personal theme of personal transition, and all of these things happening simultaneously. And it is just incredibly well orchestrated, told so simply, but the impact is just huge. But that was one of the kind of things that I was thinking about as watching it, was how the director of the film is usually the boss person walking around, you know, setting everything up, was going to be treated in this situation when you were clearly a woman, and exactly how women were explained and the oppression that is demonstrated in the film. So anyway, thank you for confirming my imaginations on that. Jordan, I want to go back to you and your background, you grew up in Australia. How did a kid from Australia with a wonderful mom, by the way, your mother is such a gem, and she shows up in the film. How did you end up hitting Arab countries, getting thrown out of a number of them, and constantly on the seeking of the truth behind the whole culture wall there?
Yeah, well, mate, thank you so much for the incredible review of the film. You've done a very heartwarming job. Thank you. I mean, I'm a documentary filmmaker, right? And so I think, like all of us documentary filmmakers, I'm on the hunt for stories that are going to give audiences insight into something that they may not know so much about. And, I mean, you met my mom in the film, right? Like, she's a bloody legend. Love my wombat.
Yeah.
She raised me to always stick up for the underdog. And so I've always had, like, and I mean, kind of being an underdog myself, growing up queer in a very small rural town in Australia, I've always kind of like had an affiliation with the underdog. And so, you know, I lived in Jordan and Palestine, Lebanon, and then Afghanistan, all kind of underdog countries. Yeah, but like making films in these places, especially Afghanistan, is just an absolute gift. Like Afghanistan is still largely undiscovered in many ways, and the headlines that we get to experience outside the country in the media are really only one dimension of the country. It is such a complex, multidimensional country that really blows your mind the more you get to know it. And so being a filmmaker in Afghanistan is the best chapter of my life that I've ever had.
Yeah, and you both have painted a picture of Afghanistan I personally have never seen before, and I don't claim to be an expert on Afghanistan. So there are people who may have studied it more that it's not as big of a surprise, but it definitely made it a more real place for me, a more dimensional place than I had imagined.
Yeah, this was like one of my key motivations in the very beginning for like suggesting to make a film, because obviously like queer Afghans are having a very different experience to the experience that I had as a privileged white Australian queer person living in Afghanistan. But as that privileged white Australian queer person, the experience I had was absolutely incredible. Oh my God. And, you know, I wanted to like make this film to show the world the Afghanistan that I got to experience personally. And I think the film, I think it does that well, because it really, it captures all of the beautiful, confusing, confronting contradictions that are a part of Afghan culture and society.
Definitely. And Jordan, one of the things that really had an impact on me was, it's kind of twofold. One is the theme that you just kind of alluded to, which is the theme of privilege. Because I was, even though it's not even mentioned, I don't remember in the film per se, but it is an impactful theme that I took away from. And the theme also of gender identity, and not just in a superficial way of, oh, Jordan is a trans man, or Jordan is a man, or in Jordan, you know, there's a woman identity, you know, that type of thing. But you call out in the film things about the concept of gender identity in terms of, you know, societal imposition into what gender identities were. And you break it down so simply for yourself that you get tired and just want to be seen as you see yourself, you know, as like, you know, without any of the external societal things being imposed on you. And I related very much to that statement by you, because from my own experience I've probably 100 transgender acquaintances and dozens of transgender friends. But if somebody stopped me on the street and said, are you friends with a transgender person? My first impulse would be to say no, because everybody who is my friend who is transgender, I don't think of them that way. I think of them as the gender, as men and women. You know, I don't see them, the journey anymore. And then I see their identity, that they are to me and they are to themselves. Can you speak to that a little bit and where you're at with that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like everybody's different, right? Everybody's doing their own thing and rocking their own identity. For me personally, I love being trans. I don't see myself as a man or as a woman. I see myself as a beautiful, chaotic clusterfuck of both and everything in between. So, like, I personally identify as trans mask, but I think because for me personally, you know, I don't want to erase the 30-something years that I lived in this world as a non-binary person with breasts. I celebrate that life that I had, and now I'm very excited for the next chapter of my life that I'm going to live. And I like integrating genders into my identity. And I think, like, I don't know, being trans is so cool. Like, really, trans people, we're, like, super cool. I really encourage everybody to transition. It's so fun.
I'll consider it, but like I kind of like my cisgender part, so I'm not sure yet I'm willing to go there. But,
yay.
You know, yeah. Well, we'll keep it under consideration. Now, you did observe in the film, you made your own self-observation, and this was actually answered a big question for me watching the film, because my overriding question in the early parts of the film was like, oh my God, Jordan, why are you there? Why aren't you turning and running as far away as you possibly can? And you did make the observation that you actually were coming to a point that you felt more comfortable there because how they saw you and how they saw your gender.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it? Like, Mon and I talked about this at length when we were editing and how to integrate this into the storyline, because, you know, I've experienced, and I'm a lot of LGBT people and people of color, and I mean, everybody has been bullied at some point in their life for one reason or another. I experienced a lot of discrimination and even violence in Australia because, you know, I've always had these labels that have followed me around. But when I went to Afghanistan, because they have such little understanding or experience with LGBTQIA plus people, I just completely was anonymous, right? I was just Jordan. And they really didn't know if I was a man or a woman. And so, like, I became just Jordan. And I think that anonymity really gave me a blank slate to really kind of reimagine myself for who I wanted to be in the next chapter of my life. Again, you know, this has to be taken with the truth and the fact that I'm a privileged white Australian person. Obviously, for trans Afghan people and queer Afghan people, it's a very different experience. It can be a fatal experience. It can, especially now, like if they get caught, they can be in prison, they can be tortured by the Taliban. It's near impossible for an Afghan person to transition. And, you know, you were talking about privilege before, like Mon and I and our brilliant, talented editors, you know, we didn't need to say the word privilege in the film, because with editing and with juxtaposing images, you're able to communicate the privilege of this character. So, for example, there's that scene where Kiana is the female character in the film. She's talking about how she can't walk the streets anymore as a woman because she gets harassed so much. And then the next shot, you have Jordan, me, the main character, walking in a T-shirt through a busy market. And with these two images and these two scenes next to each other, you realize without any words, just like the incredible privilege that this man is living in this very male-dominated society.
Absolutely.
Yes, and I wanted...
Go ahead, please.
I wanted to say, Rob, that to that question, that's a great question too, like why stay? I mean, both Jordan and I wanted also to explore in this film the sort of behind the scenes of being a reporter, a conflict reporter, or documenting conflict, you know. There is a sense of duty of doing your job and staying there and documenting what's happening that we thought would honor the profession a lot too, you know. I mean, people make a lot of personal sacrifices when they go to these places to report. Jordan was doing a documentary film for the New York Times, and I think in one of the scenes of the film, he explains this notion of wanting to stay and show the world what's happening and not flee this country that has given so much as well. So this is a film, too, about a profession that I wanted to almost, like, write a love letter to.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead, Jordan.
Sorry, Rob. Sorry. Yeah, because, you know, like, all of us in Afghanistan, myself included, we really, like, you know, we built our professional networks and our professional experience off the hardship and the misery of Afghanistan. And so when the country was falling to the Taliban and hundreds of thousands of Afghans flee, very, very, very small number of us filmmakers and journalists decided to stay. And we felt that, like, it was time to give back, which sounds like such a, you know, righteous cliche, but I actually wholeheartedly, sincerely mean it. Like, I've been living in Afghanistan for 5 years when I started my transition there. And then when the Taliban came, you know, I wasn't just going to, like, abandon this place that had really supported me and taken me in. It was really my time to give back, irrespective of what was going on personally.
Yeah, and let's go to the making of the film itself. At what point, what were you guys there for originally, and at what point did you both decide, hey, let's do this as our documentary film?
Go on.
Right, so it's important to say that Jordan was there. He got there 2016 and learned the language and started to film parts of his life as sort of video diaries and filming things before I knew him, and I wasn't in Afghanistan. I had covered the story as a reporter 2016, in fact, as well, but briefly, for a brief moment, and then had moved out. And when a mutual friend introduced us, the Taliban had already taken over Afghanistan, and I had heard about this Australian journalist who was getting very intimate access to the Taliban, and I was fascinated and sort of in a competitive nature, you know, every reporter's kind of competing for the story, wanted to know more about who this guy was, an Australian, like how, and he speaks the language, wow. So we were introduced, and that's when Jordan explained to me that he was filming his process, wanted to perhaps one day do something with the footage, but everything that was happening was so stressful, overwhelming. There were so many things he was doing, reporting for the New York Times, BBC, Channel 4, et cetera, that he wasn't really sure that this could be a film. And I tried to convince him that it was such an amazing, extraordinary story that really deserves to be told to the world. And I, in fact, flew to Afghanistan with my boyfriend, who can film. He's not precisely a filmmaker, but he's a journalist and films pretty well. And we flew there, and we convinced Jordan in person, I guess, and we started filming. And you know, in fact, Toby, my boyfriend, filmed some of these scenes with the Taliban in this village that really no Western person, much less someone with a camera, had ever filmed.
Which is absolutely amazing. Jordan, let's go to the secret sauce. How did you get that access to the Taliban? That is sort of a question, an underlying foundational question in the film itself, and certainly in our conversation today.
Yeah, it's, I mean, to a degree, it's a mystery to us as well, but, you know, one of my secret sources is Teddy. He is an absolutely brilliant human being, and he's very good at making connections with absolutely anybody, including the Taliban. And, you know, for me as a filmmaker, it's my job to make connections, to make authentic connections. And, you know, when we are filming with characters, it's only when we have an authentic connection with the characters as the filmmaker that authenticity is being translated into the film, right? Like, if it's not a real connection and you're just kind of using them to make a film and tell the story, subconsciously the audience can sense that, and you don't really get the best out of the character in the film. So, you know, it's my job to make authentic relationships, and Teddy is extremely skilled at this. And for him, you know, being an Afghan and having to make this authentic connection with these people that he absolutely hates. They have destroyed his country. They've destroyed his life. And yet he was able to, when we entered the, like, there was kind of like a final checkpoint before you disappear into these labyrinthine, dusty roads through the mountains in the west of Afghanistan. When we would enter into that threshold, we just completely left our moral compass. We left our personal life behind, and then we completely immersed in their world. And I think, like, that's the only way that you can authentically make a connection and get the best out of your characters.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's interesting because, as you described Teddy, I would not have guessed, even though it was out there in terms of why he would, because, you know, they were clearly an enemy to him and his way of life, et cetera. But I never got the sense of a hatred underneath that from him. He seemed very unbothered almost on a certain level, which is kind of intriguing. I do have a question for you on the men, the Taliban men that were in the group you were with. And the one, I didn't ever catch his name, but he was kind of like the main one that you interacted with. He seemed to have a concept of your identity that wasn't just purely, oh, Jordan is another guy. It's like he would make references to you as like, well, you can't do this because of your build and your this. And at a certain point, it's almost like, you know, he was trying to wrestle with you, and it was like I was getting that he was potentially had homoerotic feelings towards you. What was that relationship?
Yeah, it's interesting. Lots of people think this, right? Because Eastern men are very, and I'm sure we have lots of Eastern people or people from Eastern backgrounds listening. Eastern men and Eastern women, for that matter, are very affectionate with people from the same sex. It's culturally very normal, but because in the West we don't have that culture of men being very affectionate with men and women being very affectionate with women, we automatically assume it's homoerotic. But in their case, and, you know, particularly in the Talib's case, it's not homoerotic at all, at all, at all. Like, in these cultures where, and I shouldn't generalize because it's not like I'm an expert on all Eastern cultures, so I will just stick to Afghanistan. Because they don't have exposure or access to members of the opposite sex, end up building very, very intimate relationships with members of the same sex. And, of course, there are heaps of, you know, Afghan homosexual men and women, but the majority of that interaction is just, it's brotherly, it's very, it's friendly, it's camaraderie, if that's the word. So it's not homoerotic at all. And I think, like, it's also important to note that, like, Midwife is 21, right? He's just a young guy that is also, another thing to note, he's, like, not representative of every Talib. He's a very unique Talib. Like, the Taliban is a huge organization, right? And as an organization, as a whole, it's abhorrent. We hate them. They stand for oppression and extremism and violence, and they've destroyed the lives of millions. And within that organization, the majority of those individuals are absolute assholes. Some of them are okay. You can kind of, you know, figure out a way to coexist. But then some of them, a very small minority of them, like Midwife, are actually decent human beings that if they'd have had access to different opportunities in life, they probably wouldn't have ended up in the Taliban. But because they were born into it, they're uneducated, the entire village is a member of the Taliban. They didn't really have a lot of choice. But that wrestling scene that you're talking about, Rob, oh my God, it was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. Because I'd really tried, over the months that Teddy and I were living with these guys in their village, like, I'd really tried to keep a physical distance, knowing how physically intimate they are with each other. And, you know, because I didn't want, like, you know, things to get noticed on my body.
Right.
And so I really tried to keep that physical distance. But then in that scene, like, my God, he just broke that distance and just, like, oh, man, it was really terrifying.
I can imagine. It's There is another scene where he makes a comment about hoping that you're who you presented to be, or something to that effect. What do you think he was referring to?
Yes. He's referring to that I'm not going to, because one of the ways that we brokered the access was being honest about what we were doing. And what we were doing was we were trying to tell their story, right? We wanted to understand who they were, how they became who they were, what are their fears, what are their disappointments, what are their dreams, et cetera, et cetera. And that's genuine, right? That's actually what we were doing there. And that when they say that, they're referring to, I hope you're not just going to depict us as animals and barbarians like a lot of other media does. But to one of your questions before that I didn't answer properly, sorry, I have a tendency to ramble and forget what the question was. There is no way that they had any suspicion that I was trans. No way. And the reason I know that is because if they had any suspicion, they would have stripped me down and checked. And that never happened. So I know they had no suspicion.
Well, it's that, and that was the sense that I ultimately took from that. In fact, I was more thinking that they might have suspected you of being a gay man than a trans man, but because they just seemed to be there seemed to be something there of that. That was the tension throughout the film. I mean, honestly, there were so many parts of the film where I was on the edge kind of going, literally saying to myself, okay, you're talking to Jordan on the radio show. Jordan makes it through this. Jordan doesn't get shot in the head. Calm down. It's going to be okay. I mean, because it's like, that was scary stuff. I do want to sort of to go to the intellectual level of privilege. One thing, a friend of mine who is living in liberal California in a liberal town who transitioned as a trans man, we had a conversation where he was a little bit amazed, a little bit intrigued about the male privilege he has picked up that he is experiencing in his own life as a trans man. It's like you obviously were living that in an extreme way in Afghanistan, because the difference between how a woman would have been treated and how you were treated and what you were allowed to do. Has that made that, do you see that in other parts of culture that are not quite as extreme?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question. I get asked this a lot. You know, my friend made me this T-shirt, which is, I just love it. It's so good. It says, I transitioned and all I got was white male privilege. And it's so, you know, it's so true. And it's also one of the reasons that I, because I'm older, right? I'm 41 now and I started my transition at like 37 and a bit. And you know, like one of the reasons that I resisted for so long was to not, you know, I really wanted to like fly the flag for diversity that, you know, okay, you feel like non-binary or trans or a man or whatever, but you can still have breasts and live and act like a man. But for whatever reason, dysphoria took over. Honestly, I don't know the answer to that question. I know I have definitely gotten more privilege, absolutely. And maybe it's a testimony to my privilege that I can't even give you some specific examples of how that privilege is manifesting itself. I know it's there, but I can't actually give an example of how. Can you think of anything more? Well, I really need to get a better answer to this question.
No, I mean, I think I have thought about it a lot, and I think you and I, you know, how many conversations we had about everything we're doing ethically as co-directors. It was a really incredible process. I mean, I think the world is very hard for women, and I think being a man presents privileges, especially in a place where there's gender apartheid. Afghanistan, like the Taliban, is one of the most gendered societies in the planet. And so that's obviously very extreme. But I always remember how we would talk as well about, I would have loved to be there and to be filming and to have access to be able to do my job as a reporter. And as women in the Middle East, we are really blocked out of the conversation completely. Mm-hmm. And I think we really wanted to show that too, you know, just the fact that the world is so hard for women as well. And I think mm-hmm. you are very aware of that because of Kiana, because of all the people that you know, that you love and that you admire.
And, you know, Rob, like, this is kind of like a lame example, but it's something that I have noticed and it has been very interesting. Like back when I had breasts, and I'm not talking about Afghanistan here, I'm talking about when I'm in Australia or I'm in France or mm-hmm. Netherlands or wherever I am. Like when I had breasts and I would just kind of like, you know, be standing at the bar waiting for a drink or standing at the bus stop or whatever, and you make eye contact with a woman and you exchange smiles, maybe even have a chat or whatever. Now that I'm like looking like a man and presenting like a man, women are way more cautious of interacting, way more cautious. Mm-hmm. And they create more space between me as the man and them. And when I started noticing this, I really started thinking, my God, it is so, like, for women to have this kind of automatic response to men like this, and obviously not all women, but I've experienced it enough to make me realize it's a lot of women, like, they must just be consistently putting up with so much shit.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. I can tell you that from when I get in an elevator and the other person in the elevator steps in is a woman, it's like, whether it's my perception or reality, I feel like this added tension. And it's everything I can do from, you know, not pulling out my resume going, it's okay, I'm a gay man, I'm not going to harm you, I'm not, you know, it's like, whatever you've been through, I'm not part of that, blah, blah. You know, it's like, that's what I want to come spelling out. But it is, and many, many women friends, so, and I've heard the accounts of why that reaction is the way it is. But, yeah, it's really intriguing. So one thing I want to ask you both, I kind of want to ask about the stuff that ended up on the cutting room floor, and I mean that more metaphorically than literal, but, you know, you both, especially Monica, there you were a woman presenting as a woman in this society, and especially the point, and not spoiler alert to people listening, but it's so poignant, is that part in the film where the guy describes how if he heard a woman's voice coming from the kitchen, he would go in and slit her throat. What, mm-hmm. how, obviously, Jordan, and I never want to get you in a poker game, you know, your face didn't register anything to that. But what was going on inside you hearing that?
I wanted to say something too. That's a great question about what ended up in the cutting floor. But before we go to that, I wanted to say something that I think is really fascinating, and it is the fact that I think reporting and the media and journalism has traditionally been so old school, like conflict reporters, especially. You know, women, we get to cover certain type of stories, and then you have like the male war reporters who are very like gung-ho. And I think that Jordan, meeting him and knowing how he approached people was just so interesting, because I think the non-binary vision of the world is very interesting, and it's more rich. And we wanted to, you know, explore these kind of complexities and nuances. I think because he shows play with all these Taliban men who are armed and potentially very dangerous, but the way he literally disarms them, you know, quote unquote, with his personality is something very interesting. And I don't know if we would have gotten that kind of footage or intimacy through another reporter's eyes, someone who, you know, wasn't non-binary. And I think that's like a fascinating point, that we think journalism should evolve and include more diverse perspectives.
Yeah, you know, and one thing as a viewer, I can tell, let me jump this one in, just, sorry, Jordan, that No one could have done the story but Jordan. I mean, that's sort of evident as a viewer. It's like
exactly.
This could not have been
exactly.
somebody else's story. Yeah, absolutely. Jordan, sorry, go ahead.
For better and for worse. You know, one thing that ended up on the cutting room floor kind of harks back to something you've observed about Teddy and his character in the film. Like, there's this really great scene where Teddy and I are chatting in hushed voices outside the Taliban headquarters in the village. And, you know, I'm having this very naive moment where I'm like, fuck, this is so confusing because, you know, when we lived with these guys here in the village, it's almost like I like them, you know, like they're likable, they're approachable. And Teddy responds with, fuck that, these people are terrorists and they will never be my friends. And that is a scene that ended up on the cutting room floor. I mean, filmmakers know how it is. It's a painful, painful process, filmmaking. Oh, my God. Those darlings that are just dead on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really sad scene that had to get cut.
Yeah, and it's funny, though, because I'm hearing the other part of that that ended up on the cutting room floor. In the film, Jordan, you identify as being a Libra. And not to be cliche, but you sure project being a Libra throughout the film. It's like, it was like there were things you would say during the film. I go, why would you say that? And like, oh, yeah, he's a Libra. Okay, that's why. It's just like you were constantly like reaching at like the one point where you're going, oh, my God, shouldn't I go up and tell them, you know, shouldn't I line up as a woman? Because that's how they kind of want to see me. I was like going, what? Why? No.
That's a very astute observation. That's hilarious. My mom would really agree with you. I drive her mad.
And I think, like, you know, we were really sad. I was really sad, and Jordan was too, I'm sure. We had to leave out on the cutting room, on the cutting board, scenes about with other members of his family who, you know, I really love and I was very humbled and fortunate to meet. But all the stuff we filmed in Australia, which was great and so human and rich, was kind of like taking us away from the main theme a little bit too of keeping the story sort of focused on these friendships of Jordan and Kiana, Jordan and Teddy, these very strong relationships and trust. And it's like, yeah, it was very hard to have to cut these scenes, especially there was the skating one, which I really loved and was really beautiful. Jordan's sister Brianna skating with Jordan's niece in like a disco ball skating with music, and it was really beautiful.
Well,
oh, my
yeah,
God, wait,
no,
can I say one more scene that like is also telling about how amazing Afghanistan is? There's another thing. So in Afghanistan, getting alcohol is really difficult, right? Before the Taliban took control of the country, let alone after, it's near impossible. So I was going to have my first injection, right? And all I've been hearing about was how painful the injection is. So I'm like not one that really is down for pain. I'm a bit worse, actually. And I was so stressed about this pain. I couldn't get any vodka or alcohol. So I contacted a friend of mine because like opium is obviously huge in Afghanistan, right? So I contacted a friend of mine, this old Afghan man with like long gray beard and face leathered from God knows how many decades in the Afghan mountain sun. And he rocks up to my house with some opium and he teaches me how to smoke the opium that I didn't know in order to like smoke a bit of opium and then go and get my injection. And it is such a great scene because it really encapsulates so many of the surprising, beautiful contradictions about Afghanistan, but we couldn't put it in because we kind of thought that like it might throw audiences off too early before they'd kind of built a trusting relationship with the characters to then have them like smoking opium too early in the film might be too dodgy.
But it was a surreal scene, you're right, and so awkward. You guys are like looking at each other and just laughing. It was a very
it
was a good scene, but
I have to say that would have been a little bit different, you know, at the beginning of the movie, kind of going, okay, that's why he stayed. He was just loaded the whole time.
Exactly.
Exactly. No problem. So I've got. I want to ask you, and you guys might not even know this, but have the men in that Taliban unit, have they seen the film? Do they know what the end product kind of was?
Oh, mate, I'm still in touch with all of them regularly. Like, you know, once every couple of weeks or once every 3 weeks, we call each other or we, you know, send messages and have a little catch up. I haven't just gone in there, made these films and left, never to be seen or heard from again. That's not my style. I'm still in touch. They haven't seen the film, and in fact, they haven't even asked a single question about either of the films. And, you know, I find that really so bizarre and surprising that they haven't. But Teddy, for example, is not in touch with them at all. He has changed his number and severed all contact. I think, you know, the experience for him and the stakes for him were very different from mine. So he's not in touch at all, but I am. And no, they haven't seen it yet.
What do you think the reaction will be, or if they see it?
I really don't know. There's no precedent for this. I really don't know, but I can tell you that I don't want to be anywhere near them when they do.
Okay. I think that answered the question right there. Okay. Yeah, no. Speaking of seeing the film, how does the world see it? How do they get to it? What's going on with the film itself, logistically?
So, we are really happy because we just released the film in America 2 days ago. So it's on several platforms, mainly Amazon Prime Video and Apple TV, and a few other like smaller platforms for people who have cable.
All,
but we're mostly
all digital platforms, all on demand.
Exactly. And this was kind of our first push in the U.S. And now we are starting to go out to other territories that are interested in acquiring rights. We have made some deals with in other countries, but it's still an ongoing process. You know, most people want to see how something does in America still, pretty much all over the world, which is interesting. And we want audiences to be able to watch it here, of course. You know, especially because it was America's longest war as well. You know, that's one of the reasons why I think that audiences would really be interested and surprised by some of the stuff in the film. But also, it's a very rich human story, of course.
Yeah, it's so layered. And because there were absolutely aspects that were surprising and then aspects that weren't. And you know, I guess the one piece for me that was both was in conversations with these men and their viewpoints. For example, when he was saying, you know, you were asking about Osama bin Laden, and one of them had to have him explained who Osama bin Laden was. And they were like, you know, what do you think about him? Oh, I love him. And it's sort of in a very perverse way mirrored some of the political conversations we're having in the United States now with the MAGA crowd and the non-MAGA crowd, and how people are matter of fact in these viewpoints, because we each are being funneled completely different pieces of information. What were your guys' thoughts on that and that kind of cool steadfastness that these men were expressing their opinions?
I think that's a great point. I mean, everything is so polarized and politicized in the United States right now. It's almost like you can't have objective information because everything gets taken up and by one of the two parties, and there's only two parties. So things become very binary, black and white, and that's it. And I think we really wanted to explore the gray areas. And I think reality is way more complex than saying, you know, sort of this is the way things are. We wanted to find humanity in dark places. We wanted to explore these gray areas that we think are more interesting and then have people, you know, make up their mind in a way. It's what, you know, good journalism and good reporting tries to do as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, well, like we have really, and I think particularly us and the people, the kinds of people that are listening to your So, by the way, Rob, you seem like an absolute legend. Can we please be friends?
Especially,
the people who are, who are listening to your show, like, we really have to start doing cognitive behavior therapy on ourselves to, like, catch ourselves every time we think, oh, I understand that situation, it's like this. We have to start doing cognitive behavior therapy on ourselves and consistently reminding ourselves that whatever we understand from that situation is just the beginning. There is going to be more and more and more and more and so much complexity and layers and whatnot. Like, and I think that's the strongest thing about this film is that it really makes you realize that things that you thought that were true and so obvious and, you know, that bad guys are the bad guys and the good guys are the good guys, like to start realizing that there's so much overlap and kaleidoscopic interaction between so many different things that really everything and nothing is true. I think like that is the strongest part of the film. And you know, like we almost get criticized for humanizing the Taliban. There is a misunderstanding of what humanizing means. Humanizing means multidimensionalizing. We have to like, we're asking the audience to hold the brutality and the tenderness of these individuals, right? Like everybody is multidimensional and we have to like cognitive behavior therapy ourselves to remember that everything is multidimensional.
I think what you just said
exactly.
is absolutely brilliant. And I absolutely and completely agree. It's like I'm working with a concept of uniqueness and I'm impressed with the uniqueness of humans. And I think it's something that we don't pay attention to because we love to silo people we don't understand. You both are an absolute delight. The film is so important. Everybody, it's available. Go see it. Unfortunately, we are out of time today. I want to thank you both for being who you are more than anything. I want to thank you for making this film. And I definitely want to thank you for coming on and talking to me today about it. Just absolutely stellar stuff across the board. And unfortunately, that is it for us for today. We will be back again next week. We've got upcoming shows with one of the stars from Palm Royale is going to join us in the coming weeks. Singer David Archuleta is going to be joining us in the coming weeks. And singer Tom Goss is going to be joining us in the coming week with brand new music. So we're excited for all of that. But most importantly, go out to your streaming platforms, watch the film Transition. You will not be sorry. It is breathtaking. It is, will have you on the edge of your seat. And more than that, you will learn something. For those of us at LGBT Radio, thank you so much, guys. We will be back again next
week.
Thank you. And we will talk to you then.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.